It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey.
So, we still don't know anything, huh?
On the baby?
Yeah.
Well, since we just stopped the other podcast and doing this one, no.
But
she's two minutes apart, on the way to the hospital. There'll be a little Williams in the world sometime later today or early tonight.
What does that do to your heart, dude?
Oh, boy. Well, two things. Feeling bad for my daughter about now. I don't think I'd ever go through childbirth. I think I would have been fixed as a 12-year-old if I'd been a girl. I just can't imagine childbirth. So I feel bad for Jay.
I think God made a good choice when he made me a guy.
This is me too.
Yeah.
Absolutely, got that right.
But, I mean, bless all the women. I'm not sure I could be one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could be one.
And those of you that are pregnant, we're really sorry for talking about this.
Forgive us.
We really apologize.
So, sorry.
But, that, you know, death and life. My friend dying, a new grandchild coming into the world, Julie suffering, and yet the joy that will come in the moment
is still. It's both.
It's just that whole...
Life is both and.
Mixture of stuff. Yeah. And you somehow you just embrace what's there. You know, God's with you through the horrors of it. He's with you in the joy of it. And, yeah, but it's on both. I'm feeling it for my daughter at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so excited there's going to be a new life in the world. And we can Lindsay Grace, and we can't wait to meet Lindsay Grace sometime later today, perhaps.
I remember.
Plus the granddaughter's here, so that's just really, except I'm in here with you instead of out there with her.
In moments.
I'll get out there.
This too shall pass.
Yes, it will.
I just remember looking at each one of my kids when they first came into the world, and just going like, marveling at this new little life, wondering, who are you? I mean,
yes,
just
right.
that sense of marvel of going like, I love you. I really do mean that. I actually feel that. But I have this curious, you know, a little bit of a void going like, I don't know you. But I'm excited to get to know you. And just that sense of becoming comfortable there.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, honestly, it's like that's not that dissimilar from life with Jesus. Something begins. I want to know you. I don't know that I know you, but something's there.
Yeah.
And then you walk that thing out.
That's true of new friendships, man. When I crawl off an airplane somewhere with people I've not been with before, same thing. What treasure is here? What's going to come of this relationship? It's not always positive, you know? Most of the time it is on this journey, but other times it's kind of, this could be a little painful or a bit difficult. But it is that same kind of joy of, boy, just not sure what's going to come up. So that's cool.
You certainly can come at life that way, and you can certainly just sort of busy your way through it where you miss all that.
Yeah. Hey, I've got one for you.
Okay.
I won't say where, but recently doing a meeting in the home with a group of people.
Yes.
And we're kind of saying goodbye to the last few folks walking out the door, and the woman who's the hostess of the home we were in, somebody's telling a little story about the transitions in their life and them becoming increasingly comfortable with the ways in which God's working with them. And she turns to me and she said, just like your underwear this morning.
And you said?
Oh, boy. I think I turned 15 shades of red because I went, she realized,
just like your underwear this morning.
She realized what she had said. So then it was hilarious.
Backpedaling to where?
Wow.
Context, please.
Yeah, the context. I don't want to talk about my underwear, though. That's the deal.
you can't just toss that out there. That's inappropriate. That violates podcast rules or something.
I know, but this is going to really be banal.
That's fine.
This is where we're going to get really
knocked. It's like your underwear. What?
My favorite podcast in the world, other than The God Journey, which I don't listen to because I'm usually here when we do it. But the other one I listen to, which is a news podcast, this guy got on there and said, I am basking in the glory of my new underwear. And I'm like, what is he talking about? He was talking about how comfortable this underwear was. It's just the most incredible underwear he's ever owned. I tell you, I wear the same underwear. Not the same size. Not the same size.
And not his.
But I wear the same brand of underwear. I've worn the same brand of underwear since I was 6 years old, I think. You know, the old J.C. Penney Towncraft guy. So I'm like, what? I've never thought of underwear being comfortable. And he kept referring to it on the podcast. So I told Sarah, I gotta give me some of that. So we went down and we bought some. And I'm telling you what, it's just the, you know, we bought four of them. And I'm on this trip and I had four pairs of this new underwear. And I wore it on the flight the first time. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then anyway, and then I didn't want to wear the old stuff. And how that came up.
And you ran out of the old stuff?
Yes. No. No, that morning I was with her and her husband having a little bit of breakfast. And they were talking about this, you know, transition and particularly some of the, you know, moving from this performance guilt-based kind of thing and how awkward it felt trying to live in the new things God was teaching them. And it was just the struggle to, you know, one was taking a lot of concentration, the other is just easier to slip into. And I said, you know, that's going to change. She said, well, I said, yeah, it's going to change in time. I said, just like the underwear I bought. And I told them this little underwear story. I said, you know, for the first part, you know, it's like, man, I've worn this stuff forever and maybe it's the comfortable deal. But boy, when you really slide into this life in God, what it looks like, you just never go back. I mean, I've replaced all my underwear now. I've thrown away all the other stuff. I've got all new stuff. And I'm not telling you who it is. I know I'm going to get all kinds of email. What brand is that? Because everybody's going to wear the same underwear that Wayne wears.
Wayne Ware.
The overall context, I think, is beautiful. I think people who feel like, man, this is really awkward trying to live in freedom. I was much more comfortable in bondage. And I do think, get your mind out of the gutter, my friend. That's why the Israelites always wanted to find their way back to Egypt. You know, at least we got our
underwear.
But I'm telling people, hey, live this journey a while. Keep, yes, awkward detox, couple years, awkward getting through it. I'm telling the other stuff. Because people are always saying, you know, wouldn't it be easy to go back to that religious way of thinking? I'm saying there was a time when I felt that way. There is not a time now. I'm not going, Paul at the end of Colossians.
You can't drag me back.
I'm not going back to that peer-pleasing, rule-keeping religion for anything. And that's, I'm telling you, that's the way I think this God journey sorts out in time. Yes, it is awkward in the transition. Yes, getting that guilt-induced kind of way of living is. But once you slip into that life in Jesus that's just good, it's just good.
Well, there you go.
So I'm sitting here basking in the glory of my new underwear.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
You know what? Segue into...
Boy,
I was reading the paper the other day. And
really?
It's out of, yeah,
that's just new for you.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I was waiting for my coffee to get finished brewing.
Brewing?
Yeah.
I was, in your God, you know, journey mug?
Yeah. Okay. I will soon. And I think more than the article, because the truth is, I think I thought more about the title than I really ever thought about the article.
Okay, we'll see.
And it's
title.
Like the title says, some religions embrace doubt in God as part of a process that leads to greater discovery, while others consider it the worst of sins to have a crisis of faith.
Wow.
And
so what did you grow up in?
I think subtly, no one ever said this, but subtly it was like doubt's part of weakness. You gotta get over doubt.
Yep.
You know, doubt's for the double-minded. It's like, ooh, you know, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, you can't, that's how I grew up.
You can't have it.
And it wasn't like a bad thing, but if you doubt something, then God can't work with you.
And
you
probably shouldn't talk about it.
Well, you definitely don't talk about it, because then people say, well, that's why you have this lousy life you have, because you're a doubter. Nee, 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 nee. They weren't necessarily that mean about it.
But I don't know how many people I have encountered that, you know, I don't know about midlife crisis, but I think mid-Christian crisis is all over the place. And the truth is they are going like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that I've been doing, it's like they're mid-faith crisis. They're having a meltdown, and there's almost like this self-loathing that enters in. So they start dinging themselves for their meltdown, and then they start shooting on themselves all over the place.
Very carefully.
It's just not pretty.
Very carefully.
And you just go like, gosh, you know, if you don't like the underwear you're in...
Whoa, let's stay out the underwear
thing.
No. Yeah.
Let's bring it back full circle. Full moon. If you don't like the underwear you're in, at some point you got to just recognize, this doesn't fit. This is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Took one of those long airplane flights.
I can live here forever, but I'm going to be enduring something that I don't need to be enduring it.
Yep.
And I sort of like, if your Christian life for you is a pair of uncomfortable underwear that you're just having to endure.
Well, this is going to be a hard podcast to explain to people.
I think the title is pretty self-evident.
Oh, great.
we'll negotiate that later. No, but I think the reality is you got to figure this out. And I think most people are given that sense of looking down the religious nose like, how dare you? That's wrong to walk down that path and question these things. And you're just going like, it's wrong to question God? Says who?
God.
No, but I do think there's a lot of people that when they look at this, it's like, no, these are the things you're supposed to believe, and this is the great life you're supposed to have, and just play along.
And if they don't mesh, that's the only thing you can do. You got to play along.
Just play along. Quit pretending that it's not working.
And what bothers me about that is that the only, how unreal that is, it, if I'm doubting God's affection for me, I'm really doubting it. That's going on in here. But it can't come out here. It can't come out of my mouth. It can't come out in a conversation I have, because people are going to put me in the doubters club, and then all the bad things that happen to me
is awaiting you.
I've earned it. Yeah, exactly. So the fact is, nobody stops doubting. They only stop talking about the fact that they're doubting.
Which doesn't really help, does it?
Just on the face of it.
How do you process any of that?
Forget anything else you believe. The reality is, you're denying what's going on inside of you, and then you wonder why we don't grow. Doubt, I would say, yeah, doubt really is a part of this journey. It allows you to ask God and brothers and sisters the important questions you need to ask to get to the truth that God wants to give you about those things. And if you don't express it, you haven't fixed the doubt. You're just living a lie. That's the point. If you have the doubt, you have the doubt.
Well, I think what spawned a lot of this is the whole Mother Teresa deal, and I all of a sudden find the lost letters of Mother Teresa where, you know, she's writing the reality of going like, plagued in this great saint that the entire world votes and goes, yes, godly person. And we think if anyone ought to be close to God.
Except the anti-Catholics. They won't
right.
do that.
Yeah. The super fundamentalists and the anti-Catholics.
I know a few of those.
Okay. But it's like if anyone should be close to God, oh, it should be Mother Teresa. And then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, world-shaking revelation here. Publishing sensations of she doubted God's goodness or God's existence or just wherever
yeah.
she's at. And you're just going like, and she toughed it through. And then what I find just kind of, I don't know, mind-boggling is the myriad of responses that people have to that. Some are like proud of her toughing it through. And others are like, oh, maybe all this is a sham.
Yeah.
And you're just going
it
like,
it wasn't real for her. What hope do I have?
Yeah, it's as if because she performed so well, if anyone ought to know, she would. How in the world could I know, because I don't measure up? And you're just going
it,
like,
it ought to end the whole works deal, shouldn't it? It ought to end that. Because if anybody's going to qualify on works, it would have been her.
So you didn't think.
It would be. So if you think works are going to do it, like somebody used to say one time about works, say, you can throw a stone further than me. We can go out and throw a rock. You can maybe throw a rock 20 yards further than I can throw the same size rock. And we'll say, so I'll see, then the whole performance thing. So you're a better rock thrower than me. But if the requirement is to throw the rock into Canada from here,
yeah, it's real tough.
Then it doesn't matter that you throw 20 yards further than me. That's really immaterial. If the requirement is you got to throw it to Canada from here, that's where works is, I think. If she could have resolved her doubts by work, if it's resolvable for any of us,
right.
She'd have done it. You think?
Yeah.
So
I mean,
it's not.
Here's the deal. I'm not being a little name dropper here, but I met her.
Oh, boy.
Spent a couple weeks in India, in Calcutta.
Were you one of the orphans?
No. Was brought to, one of the guys that, you know, was one of the orphans that she saved and rescued off the street.
Wow.
And here we are. I have a chance to meet her. It's like a visit to the Queen, okay? And you got all these weird people outside are sort of lining up with this hope that at some point during the day, Mother Teresa walks across her veranda. And they're all out there, like, hoping to get a touch from the Queen. And we're sitting there talking with her before, you know, this little moment happens, and she can't stand this. I mean, she's like a crotchety old little lady in a spunky, I think, good way.
Okay.
You're just going like, gosh, this is different. And not I sort what of figured it would be, you know, hallowed tones and angelic choirs behind, and it's everything.
And she doesn't really walk. She kind of floats 3 inches off the ground, that kind of thing.
That's she's kind of, you know, kind of gnarled old little lady that's spunky and kind of has, you know, some zest to life. And she can't stand this.
Hmm.
And she hates the way she's near idolized.
Venerated.
And yet, at the same time, she's wanting to make that a point of interaction, going like, you know what? I'm going to try to help him see Jesus somehow. And so you're just going like, oh, I love the challenge of that. I love the way she approached that. But I'll be honest, when all of a sudden I recognized some of this, it made more sense of the woman I met.
Hmm.
And you're just going like, yeah, she's not all that different than any of us. And she isn't immune to any of the struggles that all of us have to face. And all of her great works and all of her life of sacrifice and servanthood, which I think is genuine and wonderful and does deserve praise, doesn't make you immune from the fact that, you know what? All of us are trying to struggle our way through the uncertainty of what a life of faith does involve. And I don't think faith is the absence of doubt.
You don't?
I don't.
You don't think faith is polar opposite to doubt?
I don't.
Okay. Explain that.
Well, I just sit there. It's like, you know what? Doubt is like something in the room. It's like it's there, and I have to deal with it. If it's there, denying it doesn't make it go away.
That's my point. Exactly.
And pretending to just say, well, I'll just get stronger in faith doesn't happen either.
You can get better at pretending to have faith.
You can.
That you can do.
And then you get further confused in your doubt is my experience in that.
There's the conflict. And I think for her, too, if she's having if the core of her being, not just had some days now and then, the book seems to say over a lengthy whole of her life, deep, deep doubt if this God even exists.
Uh-huh.
And if he exists, if he's a kind God. Never, seemingly before death, resolving that.
Yeah.
Never did. And yet she's venerated for and responsible to in the local setting she's in, but then also venerated for in the larger world of being a reflection of God's glory in a broken world.
Uh-huh.
But she knows she doesn't know that. She's pretending a bit, wouldn't you say?
I'd have to say yes.
And wouldn't that be horribly conflicting?
Yeah.
And how many people have I met over the years who teach, write, pastor, who live with those deep doubts as well? I've met tons.
See,
working hard.
Yeah.
Not sure it's real. Especially when the chips are down, destruction. I mean, it really is the conflict between the chaos of a broken world and the declared affection of the Father who created it. And it's that tension between those two things that makes this a very difficult issue.
Yeah, and I think when, if quote, your religion doesn't allow you to honestly navigate your way through this reality, then it's worthless.
Amen.
I mean, it's absolutely worthless because it's absolutely. Like, you know what? I don't think God... I mean, when I have a moment of doubt in God, do you think God is pained up in heaven going like, oh, how dare you, Wayne?
I used to.
I know. It's like it is one of those, oh, that's the worst of sins. And what an incredible offense to God after he's done all this for you.
Well, it's not even that, but you got the scripture that says, you know, if the person believes in his heart and doubts not that he can move that mountain into that sea, it'll be done. So you've got scriptures like that.
Yeah, but I don't see the geography moving a whole lot.
Oh, I moved a couple just this morning. They were blocking my view. And next time one of those mountains on fire behind me here, yeah. I'm going to try and move that puppy.
I'm going to really believe.
And the sea sounds like a good place to move it.
Yeah, that's a great way to throw it.
But what does Jesus mean there then? If he says, if you believe in your heart and don't doubt. So it does sound like they're opposites.
Okay.
I'm just asking what you do with it.
I'll be honest. I don't think I am the author of my faith. I don't think it's a muscle I can build. I don't think I grow in my, me big man of faith now. I sit here.
Boy, it sounds like you belong in the tiki room.
Yeah. I just go like, you know what? To me, doubt is conquered by this Jesus as he captures my heart. I've never been able to beat the doubt monster on my own. I've never been able to just, ooh, put him in the closet and he stays there. It's like, you know what? The only time that doubt has ever fled my presence is in the reality of being loved. And then all of a sudden, if you asked me if I had faith, I wouldn't be aware of it, but yes. And I think it's like faith works through love. Faith doesn't exist all on its own. If there isn't a relational component that is aware of a person and my being loved, I don't think it works.
I think why we have problems with that scripture and others like it is because in Christianity as religion, it has made faith just another religious act.
It's something I do.
It's like reading the Bible or going to club on Sunday morning or whatever. It's something I do. And so we get a passage like that. I like what you're saying about it because I think the New Testament makes clear that faith is the expression of the maturity of a relationship. So that, yeah, we start in a relationship. It really isn't trusting God's ability to move that mountain into the sea because that's a no-brainer. God's got the ability to do that. It's not the ability that's in question. I think, do I have the relational growth in who he is to have that kind of trust that this is what God's about, this is what he's doing? So it's really not the circumstance. I have the power to make that circumstance change. If I can just convince myself enough that I believe what I really don't believe inside my head, that whole mental gymnastics to me is the byproduct of a failed religion.
Yeah, that to me, it's almost like the same kind of principles of witchcraft. I'm trying to use my will to accomplish something.
Exactly.
I don't need a God around.
And when you're closing your eyes and squinting your whole thing, and
I'm going to faith it out.
Boy, that is all human stuff. And how many times have we seen that, though, where it's praying for the sick or whatever?
I know. It's all religious performance stuff.
And those 30-minute prayers where it will say so much to God because there is a certain little word combination that God needs, that if we can just find that, be healed in the name of Jesus. No, that's not it.
Or I can present the person's spiritual resume of how deserving they really are.
or how deserving we are to have it happen because we're here.
Or let's use another camps of technique and let's use the contract against God. Let's take the Bible and his promises and force him to do something he doesn't want to do.
Hold him hostage. You think that Hebrews 10:25 gun is bad? You ought to see how much where two or three agree in my name, then he has to do it.
I sit there and I look at the idea of trust in God, faith being present in me, as not all that dissimilar from pregnancy. Are you pregnant? Are you not pregnant? Are you with child? Are you not with child? It's like, you know what? If life has entered in, something's going to be born.
Yeah.
It's going to grow. It's going to gestate. And all of a sudden, it's there. It's going to reveal.
But there's a big difference between 1 month pregnant and 9 months pregnant.
Yes. And so, too, I think the dynamic of understanding how trust happens.
Yeah. I see it in my relationship with Sarah, best of all. Because when we got married almost 33 years ago now, I told her I loved her. I love her only. I love her. I trust her, you know?
And you meant it all.
I did. I meant it all as much as, a day of marriage could mean it. Now when I say to Sarah, I love you, I trust you, after 32 years, it carries a whole different depth and meaning. And the reason is because I've got 32 years of living with that woman. And I've seen her love me through the best and worst of times. I've seen her lay down her life for me. There is not a thing, 32 years in marriage, and I'm hopefully 10 years later I'm going to say, you know what I said when I was 32 years married? Oh, it's all much better than that. But I'd say I can't imagine trusting Sarah more than I do today. I can't. We're not always together because of my travels and where I run around the world. I never have a second thought about what Sarah's doing at home. She never has a second thought about what I'm doing on the road.
Never doubted, never once?
No.
No, never.
Never. Not now. Not maybe.
Ever in 32 years?
Yes.
Okay, well, then welcome to planet Earth.
1 month pregnant, verse 9 months. No, I'm just saying, I think the same thing is true of God. There are areas today that God has won in me.
Yeah.
As the author and finisher of my faith, I don't think twice. I don't think twice about money, when I go travel, how it's going to be paid for. I don't think about it. I don't ask for it when I'm on the road. I've watched God for 12 years provide everything I ever need. Other things going on in my life today, I get in the middle of stuff, and because of the anxiety in my heart, what I know is my relationship with him today isn't big enough to contain that. And I'm okay with that. That's where this doubt thing, I'm okay saying, God, I obviously don't trust you there. I just don't. And I can't make myself. So how are you going to grow this relationship
yeah.
big enough to contain that too? And that's what I love about this journey, where I see myself not trusting him with things. I just know there's more for me to grow. There's no condemnation, no cruddy bad boy I am, be better about it.
Well, yeah, I think that's where it's like, that's where, frankly, doubt can be your friend, because
absolutely.
It is a doorway to growing in a deeper dimension with him. If you don't have the capacity to acknowledge it, it seems to me that Jesus is looking for truth in the inward parts. Not denied truth, not truth stuff in a closet. It's truth in the inward parts. And if you can't be honest with where you're at, it does seem that that's a hindrance to getting anywhere as far as the God bringing it. It's like he wants my willing participation in the growth process.
In the process of growing, absolutely. But he's still the author. He's the finisher of our faith. So it's not my religious act given to God. It's the fruit of a growing relationship of love. To the degree that I know he loves me is where I'm going to find the freedom to trust. Where I don't have the freedom to trust, I'm not living as a love child. And that gives me a place to grow.
And, I mean, I grew up with this phrase, like, you know, God is a gentleman. And it's sort of like, you know, he doesn't do anything that he isn't invited and asked to do. I don't know if that's true. My experience is that God is God, and God has a tendency to actually sometimes force issues in my life that I didn't ask him for.
Well, really? See, I ask him for everything.
Okay, well, we're different.
I do, because I pray that stupid prayer of, God, whatever it takes, I want to know you. And then he goes, cool, blank check. I love the blank check.
But I think the thing that I want you to bring out is I love the fact that my understanding of God doesn't limit God's activity in my life.
No, I agree with that.
Okay,
absolutely.
So it's like, it's not just, well, will I invite him into this aspect of my... Thankfully, God will break through some of my doors of resistance and expose in an area. And what I love about the reality of doubt and the honesty that we're invited into is, in that moment, if I recognize that faith is not something I've got to work up, well, then doubt doesn't have to frighten me as much as, oh, that's a terrible, ugly part of my body I can't let you see.
Right. I don't have to be dishonest with me about it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, God, guess what? That terrifies me.
Yep.
Right now, I am freaked out officially
yes.
because I don't want to go there, and I have no idea how to parse what's happening in my own heart as to even give you an intelligent prayer. I'm just telling you right now, I'm freaked out, I don't trust you, I don't believe you've changed in character, but guess what? I'm feeling real deficient in my knowledge of that.
But the lies about faith say, if you admit that, you have now excluded God from working in your life because he can't work where there's doubt. That's the lie.
Yeah.
Of false faith. It's the whole deal of you. I remember someone, I was young, and one of the famous, you know, faith blab it, grab it kinds of dudes was speaking at this thing. And
and that's not a disparaging way.
No, I love the brother. I'd give him one of my mugs today if he were here. But he got up and he said, you know what? I just had the most horrible thing happen to me. Somebody came up to me and just said, hey, pray for my wife. She has cancer. And I looked at him and I said, well, I can't now. Man, if you, brother, never said, once you say she has cancer, she has it. You've defined the reality. That's what it is. What you should have said was, my wife has been diagnosed with cancer. Would you pray for her? Because then it's still open for it. But now you've said it, so now you get it.
So slaying imaginary dragons, huh?
You see why I'm a little bit disparaging of that kind of crap?
I do.
Yeah, because I think that really, really wounds us. People dying, sick, whatever. And instead of being in the middle of your sickness or your struggle or whatever with God, how are you with me in this? That leaves you to say, you're not in here with me in this, and I don't have enough faith to make you be in here with me with this, so I'm all alone in this. That's what that lie produces. That's why I hate that lie. I can sit there in the middle of whatever it is that I'm facing and say, God, I've got this, I've got that. I said, doctor said, I've got that. None of that language matters. When you said about reality in the inmost being, what Jesus says to the woman at the well, the kind of worshipers the Father seeks are those who worship him in spirit and in truth. And what people don't realize that means, doesn't mean those who worship in tongues. That's not what he's talking about. Worshiping in spirit and in truth means I'm in the light with God and I. My doubts are there. My struggles are there. My sins are there. My failures are there. Everything I am is in my relationship with the Father.
And I'm not running from it.
I don't have to hide it from me. I don't have to hide it from him. He sees it. He knows it. He's in there to rescue me and reconcile me out of it. He's not there waiting for me to perform to some acceptable religious scale. So, okay, now you have enough faith. Now I can come help you.
Here's two goodies
that
of answers of prayer
just
for Wayne.
Sick.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole dynamic of when people, you know, quote, they're praying about something. And then it's like, well, I have faith. And it's like they're putting their faith in a desired outcome.
Yep.
And I look at how many shipwrecks of faith happen on the rocks of, I have this expectation that God will do, regardless of whether he said it or not. But I just take this idea of his goodness and I apply it to the outcome of my choice. And so I am now going to exert this invisible, you know, matter reality called faith to get my way, regardless of whether it fits in the plan and purpose of God. And it's like, you know what? My understanding of faith is in the person of God, not a particular outcome. And
that's the relational element, isn't it? That's what makes that, if you believe in your heart and don't doubt, it's not I believe a mountain can go A to B. It's that I believe in a Father who's involved in this with me and can accomplish whatever it is he wants to accomplish.
Yeah, and it's like I think there's a measure of it's fine if all of a sudden God says, you know what, Wayne, I'm going to do this for you. When I hear that, I can look at an outcome and you just go like, God said he's going to do that. End of story, period. I don't have an argument about it. When that's something he has said,
yep.
Not when my hopes have authored a voice that I want to call God.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so much of what gets talked about in this realm, it's like I'm supposed to focus on an outcome, and I'm supposed to exert this entity called faith, and then I will get that outcome, and then it's like, see, that's how that works. And I'm just going like, gosh. I don't need a relationship for that. I just need like some mumbo jumbo phrases and a magic wand. And it's like, I don't think that has anything to do.
And there isn't any magic wand, so you're out of luck.
Yeah. It's like, well, no, you can buy some on TBN.
Oh, boy. You think I was disparaging? Okay, the lawyers can contact Brad at thegodjourney.com.
For a love gift, they'll send it to you.
Oh, and for a love gift, we'll send you a mug.
No, I'm not selling anything. The reality is,
that's bad.
And you just go like, gosh, there's no trust in a person. There's a kid wanting an outcome, and if he doesn't get it, he's going to throw a spiritual hissy fit called a crisis of faith. And I just go like, gosh, if you divorce this from a person, this whole thing gets messed up.
That's one side of it, is the whole hissy fit thing. But what about, and there are millions of people who had a relationship with Jesus for a time, thought they believed that God loved them, went through some kind of crisis with them or their kids. And there's people listening to us on this podcast, I have no doubt, who have been severely disappointed in God to the point of walking away. Many have done that. To the point of just trying to keep God at arm's length enough to get the fire insurance. But I'm not about to know him. He's not a good God because of what he did to me and how he disappointed me. There's a whole lot of people listening to this that felt they knew a God of love and then watched it fail. And then they only have two options.
But
either I wasn't good enough or God isn't good enough. What do we say to people?
But all of that was, I'm guessing, attached to my conclusion that if God loved me, this would be the outcome.
Absolutely. I agree.
And I kind of sit here and say, you know what? There are so many things that I thought this is what I needed. This is what needed to happen. This would be my best choice, that I look back with a little more wisdom of history and perspective and go, thank God he didn't answer that. Thank God he didn't do that little thing that I thought. And I don't want to sidestep the real painful issues that people have, but I do just go like, I don't feel qualified anymore to look at a given situation and conclude the loving God must do this particular outcome or he's not loving. Because you're just going like, you know what? I don't know that I can draw that clear a line.
Oh, I hear you. And on small things, I think most people do. What if your child was killed by a drunk driver on a day you prayed for their protection?
Does that mean that God isn't loving?
No, it doesn't mean that. What I'm saying is that's something you and I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know that.
That's not something I've gone through.
But I know people who are and have. And, I the answers aren't easy here. The certainty of Scripture and the certainty of the relationship with God is my love for you is bigger than what happened to you. It is big. I think the shack, the brilliance of the shack is it gets to that reality. It's not a pat answer. Here's the good God or the bad you or whatever. What it gets to is God's love is big enough to live in the chaos of this age and make sense of who he is to you. And even if you've been disappointed, even if you had a major thing in your life not come through the way you were absolutely convinced God would have to do it if he loved you, you just got to know you could be wrong about that.
See,
and be dead wrong about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and what underlies, it's like if for God to be powerful and loving, it means that my life cannot be touched with tragedy. Then
absolutely,
if that's the sort of
that's the expectation you're going to be
premise,
disappointed. Yep,
that is going to be sadly destroyed. In your experience of what real life is about, because I don't know anybody on this planet that has offered the guarantee. I mean, Jesus did say, in this life, you will have trouble. And trouble in English is a real nice little neutral word. In the Greek, it means bone-crushing opposition. Wow, that's a little different translation. That's a little more in-your-face, a little harder to deal with. Mm. And it is one of those promises that doesn't make it to any refrigerator that says, in this life, you'll have bone-crushing opposition. And I sit there and go like...
No, I'm going to put that on a mug.
No. What's so amazing to me about this loving God is he didn't run away from that predicament. And he just didn't wipe it away. He entered into all of this. And when you look at the cross, as opposed to making it some distant historical thing, when you recognize that somehow, in the mystery of that, is God entering into human suffering, himself,
yeah.
That he's not divorced from this. He's not unaware of what you're going through. But in a way that doesn't violate the reality that he gives other beings in this world choice, decision-making, and doesn't prevent all of the wrong things from going on that are wrong,
yep.
That he's not happy with, but somehow he's present in and alongside us with.
And that, I think what I want to remind people, that's not just the abstract reality you're supposed to believe. That's
a tangible
what
reality.
God wants to make sense of with you. And so wherever he's disappointed you, wherever he's angered you, wherever he's violated your expectations, just open the door a crack. Invite him back into that. Saying, God, I want to know you here. I want your love to overwhelm my doubts, my disappointment, my anger. I want your love to do that. And sometimes, I tell you, for a lot of people, it's just that simple. You open the door with that kind of a prayer. And you don't demand it happen the next week or two. It may take 6-8 months. It may take 2 or 3 years for God to unravel all the anger and all the questions and all the struggle. But he's really good at that. He's been doing the God thing for a number of years now. He really has it down. He really does well what opens our lives back to him.
Let me just share a story. Kelly and I, just after Jared was born, I get a dream one night that in the dream, the Lord says, my wife's pregnant, and he gives me the name of the child. I wake up in the morning going, like, that was weird. I don't have those a lot. And I go, Kelly, could you possibly be pregnant? And she goes, well, I guess I could see. Turns out she is. About 3 months into this, she miscarries.
Hmm.
That was really hard, really painful. Because in our little scenario, we're just going like, wait a minute. This thing began with a dream that I didn't ask for. The announcement.
It was only revealed in a dream. It didn't begin with a dream.
True.
Okay.
True. Begin probably somewhere before that. But in that whole dynamic, it's like, okay, this, in my understanding, was something that was authored by God. how do you make sense of it ending in miscarriage? That's painful. That was excruciating for, I mean, you're just going like, this didn't work. This was a total disconnect for us. Really painful. We're young. We don't quite understand much. And I just remember aching and hurting. And we're both holding each other in the kitchen, and all of a sudden I get a tangible sense of God's presence entering our kitchen and hurting with us. I didn't have theology for that. I had no prior experience. I didn't have any understanding of the emotions found in the heart of God. I mean, you're just going like, I don't know how I knew what I knew, but all of a sudden, what went from complete tragedy that was, for me, kind of a crisis of going like, God, this doesn't make any sense. I don't get this. What have you done? Where'd you go? I all these thoughts and expectations are dissed. And all of a sudden, his presence shows up, and I feel his compassion hurting with us. I don't have conclusions to draw out of that. I don't have theology to preach. I just have an encounter that says, I thought I was alone, and now I'm not. And somehow, the ache of this experience isn't removed, but the edge is taken off because I don't have the abandonment that hurts even more. And for me, it was an entry point of beginning to understand, you know what? When things happen that are painful, that doesn't mean that God is gone. It doesn't mean that it's changed who he is. That my circumstances are not a good, accurate critique of who he is. They're just what they are. That happened. And are there outcomes that go on that God didn't want? I think so.
There always are.
And the good news that I think is found in this gospel is he doesn't leave us. And my performance isn't a function of whether he's there or not.
Absolutely. And that's why whatever engagement we have with him, we're bringing our doubts there. We're bringing our struggles, our tears. God's big enough to sustain that all and to overwhelm it with the simple reality of who he is.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,